From the great state of Ohio, Buckeye Firearms Association presents Keep and Bear Radio, fighting for Second Amendment rights, calling out media lies, and telling the gun grabbers to come and take it. Now, Keep and Bear Radio.
Can you carry a concealed handgun with a threaded barrel? Do you have to obey no gun signs in public parks? Is it legal to set up a backyard shooting range in Ohio? We'll answer these and other questions on this episode of Keep and Bear Radio. I'm Dean Reek, Executive Director of Buckeye Firearms Association, and I'm joined by Sean Maloney, firearms attorney and co-founder of Second Call Defense. Hi, Sean. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dean. It's great to be back.
So, Sean, what has our favorite attorney been up to since we talked a couple months ago?
You know, it's been an exciting time for the Maloney household. I know, Dean, that you've often commented on how young and handsome I am, but I'm going to be a grandfather in November. So that's the news we just got, and we had to reveal last night, and I'm going to have a grandson.
Oh, congratulations. I guess you're not that young anymore if you're up to a grandson.
We've known each other, 20 years or so?
200 years.
Yes, probably right.
So they have a name selected?
I believe it's going to be Liam Edward Maloney II.
Liam, that's good.
Yes.
He will have a very specific skill set.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, all my kids are special in their own way. And Liam certainly, he's a standout.
Well, we've always called you special, Sean.
And I know for various reasons that, you know, I am special.
So, Sean, as you can imagine, Buckeye Firearms Association gets lots of questions about guns and gun laws. And we're very careful about not giving people personal legal advice because we just can't do that. But we do try to answer the questions as best we can. You know this because sometimes I get in contact with you and I'm asking you about, you know, the law. But I thought it would be interesting to do a podcast and pose some of these questions to you and just see what you have to say. Are you up for that?
Yeah, and Dean, that's a great idea because, you know, believe it or not, I get some of the same questions or similar questions from law enforcement from time to time. The laws change and sometimes they just can't keep it all straight. So I understand being a gun owner myself, knowing the laws the way I know them, that they're very confusing and things change rapidly. And it's better to ask these questions than not ask them. So I appreciate the fact that people take the time to reach out to you to educate themselves.
So all of these are honest to goodness questions. We're not making these up. People will email or call us, and they'll ask these questions, and we'll just start out with one. This is the first time anybody's ever asked this, and I had to smile because I thought, wow, that's an interesting question. So a guy contacted us, and he wanted to know if you can carry a concealed gun with a threaded barrel. Now, Sean, I know that some states outlaw threaded barrels because they consider them assault weapons. But what about Ohio? Is there any law at all about threaded barrels?
No, there's not. Not in the state of Ohio related to if you can conceal carry, open carrier, or have a firearm with a threaded barrel. Those are pretty common. In fact, manufacturers like SIG and Glock, and they come with threaded barrels more often than not now because for various different reasons. But absolutely, they're legal. It's a good question to ask because, again, it's different, and you never know what the ATF is doing from time to time. But, yes, you can legally carry a firearm with a threaded barrel.
So I have a Ruger 22-45, which is a 22 pistol. And, you know, they sell them. They're basically, from my point of view, like plinkers. You know, they're just to have fun with. It comes with a threaded barrel. Now, I have a suppressor that goes with it. And, you know, that, of course, is a Class 3 item and had to go through the whole ATF, you know, process, $200 for the tax stamp and all of that. But that threaded barrel, now that's not a gun that I would want to carry, but that gun in Ohio is perfectly legal for carry.
Absolutely. I have the same firearm, although I don't have, yes, I do have a suppressor for it, so I can't say that I don't, but I have that same thing. And it's a great firearm, great target practice. And yes, that's legal. And most of the manufacturers, of course, have a screw-on cap that you can put on that, so the threads are going to stay in good shape. But absolutely, if you have the opportunity to purchase a firearm with a threaded barrel, I would not be nervous whatsoever to do that. And it's entirely legal in the state of Ohio.
So, you know, some of these guns now, you know, revolvers often have little compensation ports in them. But, you know, there now are quite a few guns that will come standard with these little micro compensators. They're like an inch or three quarters of an inch, and they just screw right onto the front. And I guess you can carry those. I'm not sure how that works with holsters. I mean, have you ever carried a gun with a compensator?
Actually, I have quite a few Glocks that are compensated models, and I carry those. And it's amazing how much that compensator relieves the muzzle rise. It's amazing. You know, muzzle brake is nothing more than a device that's designed to be attached to the muzzle, often left or right at the same time, just to try to lessen the recoil. A compensator works very similarly the same way, except that redirects the muzzle blast in a way that it keeps the gun down. So it's a lot easier to shoot my 40 caliber or 10 millimeter. It reduces the muzzle rise quite a bit. So they're getting to be pretty common things. It's amazing if you look at the SIGs, the Rugers, the Glocks out there now that come with compensators or are compensated, and muzzle brakes are out there. If you look at the aftermarket muzzle brakes, there's a plethora of those involved, and some of them are very nice. And I always say anything that makes you more accurate and makes it easier for you to press that trigger should never shy away from something like that.
And just to be clear, the muzzle brakes, the compensators, whether they're screw-on or whether they're, you know, built into the firearm itself, that's all perfectly legal in Ohio, correct?
That's correct, Dean. You're absolutely correct.
All right, Sean. Well, that's good to know. So here's another question, and I have to kind of, you know, slap my forehead when I get this question because I think it's a bad idea, but I want to ask you about the legality of it. People have asked, can you have a loaded gun on or under a car seat? And I guess more than just a few people will carry their carry gun when they get in the car, and they'll put it on the seat or put it under the seat. Now, I always tell people, look, that's a terrible idea. But the question is it legal?
Well, Dean, despite the fact that it is a terrible idea, and I agree with you, can you imagine your firearm on a seat when you put on the brakes? And it hits the dash and cuts up the dash or does no God knows what. And I'm hopeful that people are asking that question, have those firearms holstered, especially if they're going to be going underneath the seat and you're going to be reach around trying to find it under the floorboard. But yes, despite the fact that it may not be the most practical, safest, or advisable thing to do, it is legal. Thanks to Buckeye Firearms Association and NOPART, when we changed the law a few years ago, we gave ourselves the ability to carry our concealed firearm in the car any manner we choose, whether it's hanging from the rearview mirror, on a seat beside us in the glove compartment, or holstered on a hip. That's entirely legal, and it's up to us how we want to carry that firearm in an automobile.
Now, Sean, how do you handle that? Because I know I'm a traditionalist. When I'm carrying, it's on my right hip, and I put the seatbelt on, and it's almost impossible to get to it in that position. Do you do something special? Do you carry it anywhere else? Do you take it out of the holster? And, you know, they have these little magnet mounts you can put in cars, or they have, safes that you can mount in your car. A lot of different things you can do. Do you take it out of the holster and do something, or do you just leave it there?
Well, you know, Dean, when I drive, say I drive back home to see my mom, it's, 6.5 hours, and inevitably, when I hit Columbus, my leg and back is hurting so bad from sitting on that gun, I have to do something. So over time, I've learned I have another holster in my armrest of my vehicle, so I will de-holster when I'm sitting and driving and have it right within my reach in another holster in my armrest. And then when I get out of the motor vehicle for whatever purpose, I simply slide it back in the holster. Now, I know of some people who have the magnets, and I guess that's not a bad idea. And it's certainly easier with today's society and the way it is. carjacking, people attacking you, and who knows what it's going to be. It's almost advisable that both you and I keep them out of our holsters, because like you said, the first thing we're going to have to do is take the seatbelt off, and time is a factor. Then we got to get our shirt out of the way, and then we got to draw the holster. So draw from the holster. So keeping our shirt up and off the body is probably almost advisable here, just from a tactical standpoint and from a physical one.
So that holster that you have in the armrest, do you just sit it in there, or do you have it mounted, or how do you do that?
I actually have it mounted. Crossbreed Holsters has a holster that is Velcro, and you can Velcro it to a little L bracket that they make Velcro. So you can cut that down and it fits right in my armrest, nice and tight to the side. And I have the holster stuck to the side of that attachment, and it makes it easy to go in and out. So, and it's basically the same holster that I have inside the waistband that's put on the crossbreed Velcro rack. So that's an easy way to do it. And I know there's a lot of other ones out there, but I try to make it as easy and as safe as I possibly can, because you stand a less than zero chance of having a negligent discharge if you're fishing for the firearm and you're going to be sliding into the holster. So I always try to keep safety paramount in my mind as I'm doing anything with the vehicle or the firearm.
Oh, that's a good idea. I might try that, Sean.
I'll send a picture of my setup.
Okay, I appreciate that. You always have good ideas.
Well, thank you.
So let's move on. This is a really common question that we get. And it's about no gun signs in parks or on fairgrounds. Now, we eliminated, the illegality of this a long time ago when we were working on concealed carry. And you can carry, if it's a public park, you can carry. Cities or counties cannot prevent you from doing that. Villages can't prevent you from doing that. But we often get people sending us pictures and they'll say, hey, I was in a local park, and there's this old sign, and it says no guns. So the question is, do you have to obey that no gun sign when you know that it's legal to carry in that park?
In the park, absolutely. You don't need to obey that. You and I both know that it violates Ohio's preemption law. Those signs are unenforceable. And I want to have you reach back and pat yourself on the back, because I don't know how many dozens of times you've gotten those letters, emails, or pictures, and you've stroked a letter, and you've gotten those things taken care of just because in the past we have sued and enforced Ohio's preemption laws. And because of that, those signs come down and those things change. So absolutely, I'm sworn not to advise people to violate the law, but the signs are unconstitutional, unenforceable, and they don't comply with Ohio law. So when you see those signs, make no big deal about it and just go on your way. Now, I always tell people, be cognizant of the fact that if someone somehow sees you and sees that no gun signs and may or may not know that it's legal, they may call 911 or call the police. So you may be faced with a little attempted variation in your habits by a police officer saying, hey, what are you doing carrying a gun? But obviously now I can't imagine any police force anywhere not realizing that it's totally legal to do that. So yes, not really advising someone to violate the law, because they're not violating the law. You can legally carry in a public park.
So what about fairgrounds? Because now this gets a lot more complicated. We get questions about fairgrounds, and we've actually started to try to work on this. There's an organization in Ohio that coordinates fairs all over the state. There are just hundreds of different fairs. And sometimes you'll see a sign posted and you'll think, wait a minute, this is a publicly owned area, but it's posted. And so why can't I carry in the fairgrounds? Can you explain the complexity of that? Because it's not always the city or the county that's actually running that fair, right?
That's correct. And it's tricky. And oftentimes you're not going to know the status of that property at the time the fair is going on until you call the city manager or the county that owns the fairgrounds. And the problem is that it's a public fairground. So if the governmental entity or a public event is occurring and the government is exercising that, or the county or whoever it is, then you have a right. It's just like a public park. It's an open space that you can legally carry concealed or open carry if that's what you choose to do. But the problem becomes, and we've dealt with this for years, Dean, you and I have, that fairgrounds could be leased out for that period of time by a group that puts on the fair. It's a traveling fair. If it comes from another city or another state, and so they lease that property, they're paying to use that property. And so the property is leased and they're a private company. So under that situation, they're the owners, so to speak, of that property for that limited amount of time. So they are in control and they can decide to prohibit firearms from there. So that's a tricky situation, and I'm so glad that you brought that up, because there's a lot of people that can get in trouble for that. I also warn people that, there's alcohol a lot of times served at these fairs, and, you know, that's another thing you want to be careful of. But more often than not, the leasehold allows those folks to ban firearms, and I don't agree with that. It shouldn't matter. My constitutional rights should not matter on another person's property rights or property interest. And that has gone on forever when, you know, the no gun signs that we've successfully have removed from, say, UDF and things like that. I don't agree with those. And I don't think our constitutional rights trump that. And so we have to be careful with fairgrounds. You never know what's going to happen. And like I said, it's not readily obvious who is in charge of that piece of property. Is it the county? Is it the city? Is it government? Is it a public space? Or now is it private because I lease that? I'm putting on a fair and I don't want firearms on the property that I'm under contract to use.
Well, we'll keep working on that problem, but it is confusing. We've started a dialogue about that. And at the very least, we're hoping to clarify some of these rules, because sometimes what they want to do is they just really want to ban the concealed carry inside the buildings. But, you know, they might post a sign in the parking area.
Right,
so it ends up being confusing about where you can or can't carry. People get, upset by that because they may have driven 100 miles to get to that particular fair. So we're working on it. And when we have something to report, we will. So,
yeah, and you and I both know that those signs posted in a parking lot, they're unenforceable. You can't do that. But again, we're law-abiding citizens, and all we want to know is the law as it is, not as you wish it was. So if we just know the bright line, the law, we're going to follow it because we're the good guys. We're the good girls with guns, and that's what we do. So you're right. The renter space, property rights is the most confusing laws in the state of Ohio as it is. Now start throwing no gun signs on the wall along those same things. It gets even more confusing and really almost more unenforceable.
So, Sean, let's move on to another question. And this is, can you renew an Ohio carry license if yours is expired? Now, the way this used to work is that your license would expire and you had what? 30 days or 90 days or a certain period of time. If you didn't renew it, you basically had to start over again. You had to take the class and it was as if that's your first license. But now my understanding is if it expires, there is no time limit. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. You're correct, Dean. Over time, that's evolved. The last time it's happened to me, and I think I admitted to you that I carried with an Ohio expired concealed carry permit for about 2 years. And the second time I carried for about a year. So when I go over that much time, when you're over the 90-day period, for example, my punishment was I had to pay for the full cost of a license, not a renewal. And that used to be the case until, thanks to you, no small part to you and Buckeye Farms Association, we got permitless carry in the state of Ohio. So now there's really no penalty. You go in and you apply for your license and you reapply for it. And I just had a friend call me, said, hey, my license expired. What do I do? Get online to your local sheriff's department, just update your application, send it in, and everything's back to normal. So there's nothing to fear. There's no more classes. You're not being punished with retraining. Thankfully, we don't have to stop carrying because we have permitless carry. But you and I have talked many, many times about how important it is to maintain your concealed carry permit for a number of reasons. You could be traveling through the United States and you need that Ohio concealed carry permit for reciprocity. More importantly, I keep pointing out, You can't carry within a school safety zone federally without a concealed carry permit. Only authorized individuals can carry in a school safety zone. And the only way you can prove that federally is by having a concealed carry permit from the state that school's in. So it's important if you vote at the school, if you're dropping kids off, you're picking kids up, you have to have that or you can't have your firearm. And that's one of the most important things. So there's so many reasons in the state of Ohio, so many places in the state of Ohio that become a school safety zone. You got to remember when the second graders from Hope grade school are playing soccer against somebody at a public park, that's a school safety zone now. And you have to be aware of that. So you need to have that permit.
So Sean, I like to keep mine, not just for reciprocity, but just to avoid any confusion or any debate. You know, if I get pulled over, I'm not wanting to have a long dialogue with the officer. So it's just easier. I know if I give him that license, that's the end of it. But just in case there's an officer who has questions, you know, he's got to then figure out if am I carrying properly, permitless, or he may not just not have been informed because not every department does education in the same way. So that license is just sort of a hassle avoider, right? I can whip out that license. It just shuts down any conversation about it.
You're so right, Dean. It's a comfort to the police officers coming up to the car. If you're showing them that, they know you're trained. They know you know what you're doing. And you're just not making things up. I have a client that I got last week who was pulled over for a traffic violation who had a firearm. And when the police officer asked him if he had a firearm, he said yes. And didn't have a concealed carry permit. He was carrying without a permit. He's an authorized individual. He's over 21 years of age. He's not prohibited by federal state law from carrying a firearm. He got charged with improperly transporting a concealed weapon. And I called the prosecutor up and I said, hey, what are we doing here? What's going on? And I tried to get rid of it at our initial appearance, but I haven't. But there's no doubt in my mind that he was legally carrying his firearm. But guess what? You know, we're taking a time out of our lives because just the police officer wasn't informed and or made a mistake. But be aware that that can still happen. Again, we've talked about this before. We don't argue on the side of the road with the police officer. Give me a call and we'll straighten it out. But I was shocked after all this time that he was cited for improperly carrying a concealed weapon without a license when we have permitless carry.
No, it can take years sometimes. You know, the bigger departments, they may, you know, hand out a flyer. They'll have a class. They'll go over all the new laws. But in a lot of the smaller places, they don't necessarily do that. You'd be surprised at how many years it takes for some of these officers. And it's not that they're trying to, you know, do a bad job. It's just that if they don't know about it, they've got to go by what they think they know. So what's the point of having the hassle, right? And that I prefer to be a low hassle guy. And if I can have that license and just end the conversation, that's it. Then I can be on my way.
And that's great advice. And I encourage everybody to follow that advice. If you don't have a permit or you've never had a permit, I can tell you firsthand from being an instructor and attending classes, there's a wealth of information involved in these classes. And it's well worth your 8 hours of time and maybe a little bit of extra knowledge on the range. So, yes, if you don't have a permit, get one. If you're expired, renew it. Keep up to date. There's a lot of advantages to it. And I even mistakenly handed my concealed carry permit to the TSA agents at the gate, and they let me use that as my ID. And I was shocked when I realized what I did at the end. But, you know, it's recognizable. It's a government ID.
So, Sean, let's move on. And we still get questions about bump stocks. So the question is, what's the status of bump stocks in Ohio?
You know, between bump stocks, arm braces, binary triggers, you never know what's going on. But right now in the United States, bump stocks are illegal still. Federal law makes them illegal in the United States. The United States Court of Appeals in the Fifth Circuit, however, ruled that federal law defining machine guns does not apply to bump stocks because semi-automatic rifles equipped with a bump stock do not shoot multiple bullets with one pull of the trigger automatically or by a single function of the firearm as the law requires. Of course, the ATF and the Trump administration at that time changed that. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court in February, at the end of February this year, took that matter up. I heard oral arguments on the matter. And it was quite a lively oral argument as far as they go. Sometimes you have a cold bench and they just listen to what you said. You have your briefs and all the other information that people throughout the country have sent in. But the Supreme Court in this case, they're split. Of course, you have the normal left and a normal right, but there was a lot of good questions, and it shows you that I'm not that confident that they're not going to try to come up with some new ruling or interpretation to totally eliminate the bump stocks. But we'll see. We'll see what the more federalists on this side take a look at it. But it was an interesting oral argument. I think you can probably still get those online on their Supreme Court's webpage. But there was a lot of good questions. And you can kind of tell how some of the justices are going to go. The ones that we would expect to vote against it are going to. But even people that you would think are a little stronger on the issue had some questions. So it'll be interesting to see. Now, they expect that decision to be out sometime this summer. So, you know, we look forward to that rather quickly. Now, the other question is, allegedly, Americans with bump stocks destroyed those, had to destroy them. I often tell people that I got more bump stocks turned into me as an attorney from clients than the FBI ATF did. So interestingly, we'll find out what happens when this ruling comes out. But if it's held to be unconstitutional, that was kind of an unlawful taking. And there should have been at that point in time a stay until this thing was decided. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we published an article because there were instructions on how you were supposed to destroy them. I mean, right. It would like show you diagrams and you're supposed to cut this and break that and whatever. But the information we've seen is that there's not a lot of compliance on this. I think people are just kind of hoarding them and just waiting to see what happens.
Well, I think you're right. And I made a mistake. I had an H&M Defense, made in Ohio, by the way, AR-15 pistol with an arm brace. Well, I didn't want to mess with what was going on, and I wanted an AR. I wanted to be able to carry it concealed in my automobile, but I went down to Mount Orb to where H&M Defense is. I know the guys down there, and I just had them turn it into a carbine. And then all of a sudden, the court says, you know what? They're legal, so now I'm going to have to buy another firearm just to replace my AR-15. But a lot of people are in the same position with bump stock, so you know we'll have to see what happens.
So, Sean, we're going to move on now to a question that gets pretty involved. People ask us about this all the time, and it involves backyard ranges. Can you set up a backyard shooting range in Ohio?
It depends. It depends on if you live in a township. It depends on if you're in a municipality, in a city. It depends upon what the zoning is in a municipality. So it depends on a number of factors. But the most obvious one are for those people that live in townships. Not too long ago, it was a farm. Maybe their house is located on what used to be a farm. Maybe the farmer is still there and wants to shoot. But yes, it is legal in a township to do a range in your backyard, your front yard, or wherever you want to put it. But you still have to make sure that it's safe, and you still have to follow safety guidelines. Either it's a backstop, it's a berm. You know, the last thing you want to do is to have bullets leave the range, because I don't care who you are or what you're doing. If you start sending bullets out of the range and they start landing in swimming pools and in houses and go through doors, which, by the way, I have represented people who have had that happen to them, then, you know, it doesn't matter. Your range is going to go away. You know, and what makes a safe range? You know, the location, the safety measures, the layout, the berms, following necessary regulations. When you're designing that outdoor range, proper backstop, barriers, bullet bunkers, there's a number of different things. And I always say the NRA offers a lot of information. There's a lot of information out there online of how to properly make an outdoor range. I always tell people, you know what? Get your range set up, invite the local police department over, let them see that, you know, you have a range and it's safe and you know the rules of gun safety, because at least when you start shooting and a telephone call start coming, they're going to say, oh yeah, that's Sean. He just set up a range. We took a look at it. And so maybe they'll do a drive-by to satisfy the person that made the telephone call. But, you know, if it's safe, if bullets aren't leaving the range and you're not a knucklehead shooting at midnight, you're not going to be in any trouble for the most part. And even though you may live in a municipality, I mean, there's a lot of municipalities out here that still look like the country. They've moved in towards the country, or maybe they're annexed. But if you follow the zoning, and it's not zoned against it, you can still do that also. So you're not being totally barred, but again, you got to take a look at your local regulations, especially if you're in a city or in a municipality. It's easier in a township, but you still have to make sure that you're operating a safe range in the township. And again, invite the neighbors over, let them know what's going on. There's no sense of keeping it a secret. And I always advise people to, you know, to let the local law enforcement know what's going on. I always, if anybody in the state of Ohio is thinking about that, you want to give me a call. My cell phone is 513-484-0142. I can guide you in whatever area you're in, but absolutely it's legal, but you still have to do it safe and you still have to do it properly.
So just as a general rule, and this has been my experience, is if you're in a city or if you're in a village, it's almost always going to be illegal to shoot a firearm anywhere. I mean, you cannot discharge in most cities or villages. In townships, very often you can, but you've got to look up your local laws to see what they say about that. Now, I live in a city, and the city very explicitly says you cannot discharge a firearm. Do you live in a city, Sean, or are you in a township?
I live in a township. I live in Liberty Township.
Okay, so can you discharge in your township?
Yes, we can. And I have neighbors that do. I have, for various reasons, not related. My backyard backs up to what used to be a two-lane country road, is now improved country road. We still have a large number of wildlife, and my backyard is still in a deer crossing. So oftentimes I'm forced to dispatch some pretty wounded to white-tailed deer. So yes, I can, and it's legal. But even though I'm in a township, the subdivision I'm in, there's no safe way for me to, in my view, discharge a firearm. So I don't. But what you said is right. I imagine somewhere, someplace in a city or municipality, you can discharge a firearm, but I don't know of any. So that's a good rule of thumb. If you live in a village, if you live in a city or some kind of incorporated municipality, you can't do it. It's not going to happen. But if you live in a township, generally speaking, you can. You have that opportunity to do that, but you still have to make sure that it's done in a safe manner and you're far enough away from your neighbors.
Now, there are some resources on this. There is the NRA Range Sourcebook. I have a copy of that, but you can buy that from the NRA. I'm not sure how expensive that is. It's not a cheap book, but it goes into a lot of detail on how to construct ranges safely. And then there's also some information, not a lot, in the Ohio Revised Code. Mm-hmm. And Sean, I knew we were going to be talking about this, so I looked it up, and it's 1533.83 and 1533.84. Basically, all it says is here are the definitions for a shooting range, and here are the standards, and the standards refer back to the NRA Range Sourcebook.
Right.
The other thing that you can do, and you already suggested this, talk to local police or talk to your sheriff, especially if you're in a township, you're probably dealing with a sheriff, or talk to a wildlife officer, because in Ohio, most public ranges are governed by the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, or I think it's specifically the Division of Wildlife.
The section that you quoted, section 1533, is all about wildlife and conservation. And so they're the ones tasked with setting the rules with shooting ranges, outdoor shooting ranges in the state of Ohio. So, and I've never known a wildlife officer that wouldn't come over and take a look at what you're doing. That's what they're tasked to do. And they'll do that anytime you ask, really. But you're right. I mean, there's a right way to do it. There's a wrong way to do it. Stomping your feet and saying, I have a legal right to do this, isn't a way to make it happen the easy way anyhow. So you're right. You have someone take a look at it. Wildlife officer, get a blessing. And like you said, I have a copy of the Range Safety Manual also, and I also have it on disk. So you can get that online now. And I have sections saved on my hard drive directly related to just how to build a safe range and the definition of a backstop and things like that. I need it in my practice, but I've been involved in setting up several outdoor ranges because if we're all safe, it's better for all of us, because more than anything, using a firearm, when one person makes a mistake, it's imputed to all of us. And I always try to keep things safe and make sure people understand that we're safe and we're the good guy or good gal with a firearm.
Now, Sean, the way that this usually happens is we'll be contacted and someone will say, you know, I set up a range and a neighbor is complaining. One recent contact was there was a woman who she said she's retired. She wanted to shoot in her backyard. She lives in a township. She's set up her range. She said, I'm taking her word for this. She said she set it up legally and properly, but she has a neighbor complaining about sound. So she said that the sheriff had told her that he was going to have to charge her with some sort of offense, you know, dealing with sound, even though the sheriff had actually shot at her range. And so I'm not exactly sure what's going on there. But so how does that work? Because that's usually what it is. It's usually sound. Your neighbors don't like hearing it. They complain. And then you get this feud between the neighbors. And eventually that range will get shut down.
I'm actually been involved in representing some individuals that have a range like that. And I can tell you there's a very strict formula set up for the amount of decibels per hour of gunfire. And it is almost impossible to violate that. It is almost impossible. I can tell you that. So realistically, they'll have a very difficult time getting her shut down. Now, obviously, there's going to be the Karens and Todds of the world that don't want to hear that. I deal with that all the time. But she has a right to do it. And if they want to take her to court or the police want to try to shut her down, they're going to have a very difficult time doing it based on the formulas there. The Division of Wildlife has taken very good care to make sure that everything is done properly and the metrics are out there. So yeah, you're going to have a lot of people complain. The sheriff is probably just going about their best way to kind of make this thing go away. But unfortunately, if they try to shut her down, she's going to have to hire an attorney. She can try to do it on her own, but it'll be a lot easier with an attorney. But I can tell you that the regulations are there and they're slanted towards her and her ability to exercise her right to shoot in an outdoor range on her property. If she's doing it safely and the only issue is noise and she's not doing it at night or any unreasonable times, that's just part of life in a township.
So Sean, where is it mentioned on the decibel levels?
There's a formula. It's in, I don't have the code in front of me, but it's in the same section of 15. And there's a formula of exactly what it is. I'll find that out for you at a later time. I don't have it in front of me. I researched it heavily, so I have it laying around in here somewhere, but off the top of my head, but it's in 15 somewhere. It talks about the decibel levels, the average decibel level it can be for an hour. And like I said, I'll get that to you, Dean, but it's almost impossible to violate it. I tried to represent somebody that just wanted the peace and quiet, and I thought they were being reasonable. Well, I looked at that code, talked to some expert witnesses, and they said, Sean, never going to violate it. You'd have to almost shoot continuously and violate this thing for an hour.
Well, that's good. You can get that information to me.
I'll get that for
you. We can discuss that. Yeah, we could discuss that in a future podcast, or we'll just put it in an article or something like that. I know one of the rules is your range cannot be within 300 feet of an occupied dwelling. So you can't set up a range like right next to your neighbor's house.
Right.
So it has to be 100 yards or 300 feet from an occupied dwelling. Now that's, you know, so that's a football field.
Dean, I found it real quickly. It was in a memo that I wrote at section 1533.84 shooting range standards. And it outlines it pretty exactly what has to be done. And if anybody has a interest in this also, I have several motions and briefs that I filed in court that I can give them all the up-to-date information on that. And basically you're talking about 60 decibels over a period of time. So I have a lot of information on it. But again, they didn't half guess when they did this. There's very strict standards dealing with this. But again, it can be found in section 1533.84 of shooting range standards in the Ohio Revised Code. And again, that deals with conservation. And essentially, it's all governed by the Division of Wildlife in the state of Ohio.
So that's really good news. We don't have that on the website, so I'm going to get that posted because we have these other the definitions mm-hmm. and the standards for shooting ranges. I'll get this posted as well, and maybe we can do an article on it. because
I'll make sure I give you the memo too. So it's very in depth.
We get a lot of questions about that. Well, Sean, thanks for spending some time with us again. Where can people reach you if they have any questions?
My cell phone is on 24 hours a day, but just try to let me sleep here and there is 513-484-0142. My office direct is 513-463-0073. And if anybody has any questions related to concealed carry and the law, you can go to Second Call Defense, and at Second Call Defense, www.secondcalldefense.org. And you can look at the website and you can find just about anything you need to know about concealed carry and firearms. And please ask me before you act. It's always better to at least let me advise you yes or no before you do something stupid. I always tell my friends, why do you wait until after you do it to call me? So just take a second and give me a call. And Dean, it's a great way to start the weekend again. It was great talking to you and spending some time with you.
Well, thanks, Sean, and we'll talk to you again soon.
We'll see you, Dean.
That's all for this episode of Keep and Bear Radio. If you enjoyed the podcast, I urge you to subscribe. And please subscribe to the Buckeye Firearms Association newsletter at buckeyefirearms.org. If you'd like to become a member and support the work of BFA, go to joinbfa.org. Use the discount code PODCAST to get $10 off your membership. That's joinbfa.org. We'll see you next time on Keep and Bear Radio.